Now it's time to get back to Dr. Future.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. And now we're bringing on Greg Panos from Long Beach. Greg has been a correspondent with us for many years now, as well as his partner, Richard. And they have provided us with many interesting stories coming from the world of Seagraph in this case.
Yeah, we lean on these guys to be up to date in the world of performance animation and what's going on in the world of VR and theater and culture and...
Yeah, culture, that's
all kinds of cool things.
There's a cultural connection here. Greg has been at Seagraph, Special Interest Group Graphics. It's an annual conference on computer graphics organized by ACM Seagraph, and it's been around since 74, and it has all the most creative people that create what you see on television and radio and the internet.
That's right. It's one of those talent pools for people who are pursuing Hollywood careers. It's one of the places to get seen.
Yes,
your
so
technical
welcome,
talents.
Welcome to the show. Sure. Now, well, one of the things that crosses our attention immediately, and perhaps you can help us with this, is the idea of deep fakes, right? Did you see anything at Seagraph that talks about this? If I could get, like, Winston Churchill to do the intro to my show, wouldn't I? Wouldn't you?
The mighty Alan Lundell with the beautiful Dr. Future and Mrs. Future is a day in infamy.
Yes. Yes, that's it. We have, and every week we could have a different celebrity we know and love do our show for us. And how far are we from that kind of technology, from what you saw?
Well, I did the report 2 months back on deepfakes from the computer vision and pattern recognition conference.
Yes.
So what we saw at Seagraph, some of the presenters from that prior conference were at Seagraph showing some of their work.
Yeah.
More of the stuff that was visual appeared at Seagraph because it is very much a visual conference. It's more about graphics.
Right. So you can do more, have a photorealistic avatars, that kind of
right.
thing, right?
So anything video or still-based of humans or of simulated characters was presented at Seagraph in one paper or another, followed up on some of the developments of the computer vision conference. Mm-hmm. I think that the audience at Seagraph was much more interested in the developments in this particular area than the strict scientific attendance of the prior conference.
Yeah.
And it created a buzz. Some of the demos that were being shown were very comical and funny and using various celebrity characters, animating them.
Any in particular stand out for you?
No, just the current ones.
Were they doing politicians or acted actors have their avatar counterparts on display?
Yeah, yes. But depending on what was being shown, the selection of characters more or less supported it, what they were talking about technology-wise. One of the big highlights of the show was real-time, photorealistic, computer-generated character that was produced by the people at Digital Domain, which is a special effects house here down in L.A.
Yeah, one of the big ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, James Cameron, huh?
Yeah, he started it, and they do a lot of the scenes from movies, lots of the shots that get carved out to various effects houses for big movies.
Yeah, I was there in their studio when they debuted Apollo 13.
That's right, yeah. I remember going to see the rushes one afternoon of that great, great movie they did there.
Yeah, and right, they used to have that Friday afternoon social to see the rushes.
They go for the state-of-the-art special effects.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of specialty work in computer-generated faces and real-time faces and facial replacement. Mm. And they built a system that works in real-time, uses machine learning to learn all the various expressions and to identify them. And the identification of expressions in a machine learning context helps the computer animation very rapidly use the right expressions when it's tracking a real-time performer. In the past, the performer had to accommodate the way the system was tracking the face in order to get it to look natural. Hmm. And now the signal-to-noise ratio between what the performer's doing and what the performer's intending is bridged by the machine learning program, which has learned all the various variations and kind of picks the one that's the best one and then uses that to drive the facial model.
Nice. Hey, did you see any de-aging algorithms for A-list actors?
Well,
I understand if you don't want to admit it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but isn't that, won't the CAA and all the people they represent, for example, or Morris Agency, want their people to look good and are willing to pay for that? And they'll pay the wizards of Seagraph to achieve such ends?
Well, you know what? I would think that the agents that represent famous people would be very interested in learning about the technology, how to help their clients. But some of that's going on. They're usually young people that are new hires at these agencies that are sent out to these tech conferences to skulk around and figure out if there's anything there.
Yeah.
But the actors themselves and the old agents that represent them, they have a pretty solid business doing what they've been doing, and they're not really motivated to change it up very much. They want to see their clients be cast in movies that they want, in roles that they feel they deserve.
Yeah, I was just thinking that they could increase the length of time that an actor would be viable for being on the A-list if he could stay looking great for like 20 years instead of 10.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought so too. And then I've had lots of conversations with people in that area about that.
Yeah.
And it's not an area that they want to get too into.
All right. Well, interesting, you know.
Even though agencies have been getting deeper into the production side.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, listen, we got to go to a break. We're talking to Greg Panos about the marvels of Seagraph this year. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show, and we're talking to Greg Panos about the Seagraph Computer Animation Festival that just ended earlier this month in L.A. The electronic theater was always something that amazed me at Seagraph. Greg, did you see this year's electronic theater animation?
Yes, I did. It was actually pretty good.
What stood out for you there?
It was in the Microsoft Theater, which was next door to the LA Convention Center, and it's really a gigantic theater, and literally every seat was taken. I couldn't believe that there were that many people there.
It's a real state-of-the-art theater?
Yeah, just beautiful. A lot of the presentations were foreign companies that have done silly little animations and fun, funny, stupid stuff that just got everybody roaring. And it used to be just lots of clips from Hollywood movies, but they kept that to a minimum, and they went for the artful material that has been generated from smaller production companies, more experimental projects, comedic. I think it was nicely curated for the hour-long event that it was.
Very enjoyable, huh?
Yeah. They have another event that I was at called the Real Time Live. And this is another well-attended event with thousands of people in the audience in one of the big, big, big convention center halls.
So what do they do there? Live graphics animation?
Yeah. So this is all done real-time. Oh. Performance animation, the virtual human character performed by Digital Domain was performed live in a banter between two characters wearing the various suits and motion capture.
Now, for the uninitiated, what would be the experience? Where you see an actor in special gear that then would appear as a different character on the screen?
Well, because it was a demonstration, they had a picture of the actors backstage wearing the various digital suits and accoutrements that allow them to drive the animation.
Yeah.
And then you saw next to it, side by side, the computer-rendered animation of the actors themselves. It was one-for-one correspondence. There was really no lag between watching the camera view of the performer and then watching the performer's avatar perform for you on the other side of the screen.
Was the performer able to get feedback by looking at his or her avatar in real time, and so that they could?
Yeah, they have a pretty elaborate monitoring system for the performers, so they can check themselves, and they can also see a video of the audience if they have a camera aimed at the audience. They've got that there
so
as well.
So they can get their reaction shots.
Yeah, so they were interacting with someone else who was on the stage. It was literally without any delay at all. They have maintained that they can do these kinds of character performances over relatively low bandwidth connections that drive the essential parameters of the face and the body without any lag at all. That remote telepresence or remote performance animation capability is something the whole computer graphics community has been waiting decades for. Finally, we're at a point where it can be implemented, albeit, you know, $20,000 system. But back in the day, it would have been $200,000 or $2 million to do anything even half as good or a quarter as good.
So would this allow an actor to be anywhere in the world and act in a major production in Hollywood?
That's an interesting idea. I don't know how many producers in Hollywood would gamble on this kind of thing. But people that are involved in experimental projects and they're trying to fine-tune and develop products and software and make the performance of these systems optimal are more willing participants in engaging in projects that show the technology. Mm-hmm. And if it makes sense for a particular movie or a scene in a movie, then it's available to them. We'll see whether many particular examples of this will emerge.
So I'm imagining you describing, in effect, a green screen studio where all of the actors are dressed in some kind of costuming that allows the live CGI of the rest of the scene. Is that what you're describing?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the movie The Lion King, the most recent version of it, was directed by Jon Favreau. He's done quite a few blockbuster movies, and he's a really interesting guy to work with who has technology at his heart and making the filmmaking process transformed into something more modern. And he did a lot of the recent Lion King in virtual reality. So there are some talks that were given at SIGGRAPH describing the whole process and showing the key crew wearing virtual reality headsets in a room and navigating throughout the virtual scenes and doing all the blocking and planning of where the virtual actors were going to be. In this case, they were animals. Once they figured out where everyone was and where everything was going and the pacing of all the scenes, that information was passed off to a high-end group that did the super high-end rendering of fur and of lighting and reflections and the savanna and all the photorealistic work was done on top of the VR filmmaking.
Wow, and so it's really kind of like a convergence of actors as people in like almost a role-playing game in right. a virtual set. And so you think of all of the advancements that have happened in the gaming world, and yet now that is turning into the Hollywood shooting arena. And then once all of that live gaming has been captured cinematically, then it goes into computer animation and graphics and gets perfected for the cinematic screen.
Right, exactly.
I like the Intel demo that I saw online where you're in the middle of a cowboy scene. Like imagine a shootout, for example, on a Western street, and they're eyeing each other up and they're getting ready for the shootout. You're on the street and you can run from one to the other and look at them close, look at the bystanders, walk around, take any point of view yourself as the viewer. You're not limited to just what the director wants to show you of the
right.
scene.
Yeah, well, that leads me to the next topic, which is volumetric video.
Right.
Yes.
And there was really quite a bit of volumetric video being presented at SIGGRAPH.
So that's really happening then.
Yeah, and it's a new technology, and the standards haven't particularly evolved yet to satisfy the industry where a lot of players are going to dedicate resources to looking into it. But
yeah,
there's
it
a lot of
potential.
Experimentation.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what director is able to do something really good with it. But from what I can see, it's like putting a dome over a movie set, and then the dome is covered with cameras that record the action in every conceivable angle and
right.
allow you later to visit the set like it was a holodeck, like as a three-dimensional space that you could cruise through
right.
while the action unfolds.
And one of the things that this volumetric yeah. capturing studio adds is the ability to render any individual or prop as an object. And so then it becomes a virtual object that can be played with.
Right. So dozens and dozens of cameras are faced inward from a dome,
yes.
and then the performers are inside of the dome, and they're lighted equitably throughout the whole space. And then all the cameras capture all the video streams from all these different angles, and then that is processed into a very large point cloud representation of the entire scene. Mm. And then that is in turn turned into other four types of data that can be rendered in real time. And the camera, the virtual camera, can be moved around to any place in the scene. It can be in front of the cowboy or underneath the horse, or it could be moving.
Yeah.
And that kind of creative flexibility after the fact is the real allure to doing volumetric video this way.
It looks really cool. I think some of the early adopters of this technology have been some of the football teams, where you see some of the games, the football field, where you could walk around
right.
and look at it from different angles with the play.
Yeah, well, Intel acquired an Israeli company called Replay Technologies, and that's exactly what they were working on. They were working on an implementation of a large-scale volumetric capture for stadium-based sports events.
Yes.
So they can go back, rather than just a regular slow-mo, where they have a single camera's point of view, they just slow it down or speed it up or make it go in forward or reverse. In this particular case, they can place the virtual camera anywhere on the football field, and they can get right up there and watch the ball fly into the hands of the quarterback or whoever's, you know, receiving it or kicking it. They can follow the ball. It's really almost like magic.
Yeah, who'd want to sit out in the bleachers or even in a front row seat if you had that kind of action?
Oh, boy. Right. And the possibilities for fantasy football are just over the top,
you're in the middle of the scene or wherever you want to
play
be
any
in.
Player now.
You're like a time traveler, being able to rewind and going forward in the scene.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, it's a superpower. There's no doubt about it. Computer graphics are giving everybody superpowers. They have the power to pretend to be somebody else. They have the power to be invisible. I saw some examples where a machine learning program was looking through a camera, figuring out what was in the scene, and then selectively omitting people that were in the scene. But basically, they look like little wavy undulations of light as they walk past you, and you can see through them as if they're like a glass, just a little remnant of a glass person. One of the people that was talking about that was saying, well, this is perfect privacy filter. You can shoot anywhere and shoot anything you like, and you don't have to worry about somebody not wanting to be in the photograph or the permission, because the machine learning program will selectively omit anyone that you haven't specifically designated.
The best thing about it is blurring those who don't want to participate. Huh?
This is called diminished reality. The example that I just described, where you can selectively remove things from a particular scene. So if you're wearing augmented reality goggles and you're looking through glasses that are adding computer graphics to the scene that you're looking at, you could ostensibly believe that the system could be engineered in such a way to remove things that you're looking at in the real world. Like you walk through a corridor underneath a bridge and it's graffitied all over the place, and you decide that you don't want to be seeing graffiti. You would rather see Rembrandt painted on the walls.
Nice. I like that. So we have to go to a break right now.
Break time.
We'll be back with Greg Panos after the news break.
All right.
This is KSEO, Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. See you in a moment. Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Greg Panos on the line talking to us about Seagraph 2019. Greg, we've got a comment from Richard. Said the Lion King director used VR to plan out shots, lighting, and pre-visualization, but there was no motion capture or facial capture used in the animation.
Wow. So no matter how real it looks, that was all animation. That was all
effects. Well, he would know. He's a Disney expert, and I think he's read a lot more about it than I did. I think the interesting part was that so much VR was used by the principal filmmakers in that particular production that it was a wow moment for anybody that is looking at the new technologies to work in filmmaking.
Well, if you just compare storyboarding to what it was when Scorsese was getting started, and he was like drawing his visions on a napkin or whatever, and look at what they do now. They can pretty much manufacture the whole movie, before they bring an actor in.
John Favreau, the director, in some of the interviews that I've seen, that's exactly what he says. This is a real evolution of the storyboarding process where it doesn't have to go back and forth with boards. It's just being crafted in real time amongst the filmmakers and the cinema photographer.
Well, with volumetric video, they could create a scene and see what it looks like by walking around it, see if it fits properly.
Right. Yeah, so they were using a gaming engine to do that. There's a production company in Hollywood that has been doing a lot of really great VR experiences, and I think they were tapped to help put together the elements of the filmmaking process. That was a really brilliant idea to grab these people that really knew what they were doing in VR and then say, hey, you know, we'd like to do this or that. Can you help us? And then the answer was absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel in VR. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah. So Sigriff had what had previously been described as the emerging technologies area or gallery. Yeah. So this year they renamed it and rebranded it as the Sigriff Experiences Gallery. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more of a general term, but it's a special area where they invite real leading edge experiments to be shown or showcased from universities or from commercial outfits or private artists that have been working with immersive media, immersive technology, including VR, AR, 360 video, volumetric video.
Well, Michelangelo's Sistine Ceiling was one of these.
Yeah, so this was the one that had kind of a long line, and it was because they did a 3D scan of the Sistine Chapel, and they built out all the technology needed to make it a super, super high resolution, super photorealistic VR navigable experience that ran in real time.
You could walk underneath it.
Yeah, they were using a super high-res headset, and people would basically put the headset on and wander around and click on various areas that would take them to fixed points to look around from the Sistine Chapel. But it was all rendered in real time and in 3D at a super high level
nice.
Of
so
fidelity.
If you wanted to, could you be close up on some of the art?
Yes, absolutely. I didn't have a chance to try it because the line was too long.
Yeah.
But it got written about extensively.
Yeah, I saw actually in some of the clips for SIGGRAPH that are up on the web, if you want to see little outtakes, there's a few outtakes of that. It's very impressive.
That's neat. It's interesting juxtaposition of classic art with the new art forms also.
Right.
And in the combination of the two sounds like they were very popular.
Yes, and one of the other things that was really fun, we were talking about space earlier in the show, and NVIDIA had a great exhibit area where they had put together a virtual reality and interactive space experience where you could be in a spacesuit outside of the LEM, jumping and running around the moon, and you were basically sitting in front of a blank background with a camera trained on you, and it was using machine learning to intuit what your movements were and then map them into the astronaut.
Wow, holodeck tech.
Yeah, it was like a holodeck, exactly.
How much gear did you actually have to wear?
You didn't have to wear any gear at all. You just got in front of the background, and then they trained the camera on you, and they used an iPad or a tablet to move the camera, the dynamic camera, around.
Beautiful.
And somebody was using that. So
now, if we could just get 1/6 gravity now.
Right. Disney showed a short in the virtual reality theater that they had done, which uses a combination of two-dimensional animation and three-dimensional animation living side by side. It was called A Kite's Tale. I think you'll be able to watch it on your VR system not too long from now when they release it. Sigriff is a place where some of these early experimental projects are shown. And,
is that the one where you're wearing a tail? It looked like a lizard dinosaur tail.
No, that was something else. That was something that was in the Sigriff Experiences Gallery, one of the more physically oriented demonstrations where
an animated tail, but it looked like a real tail. It wasn't just
it was a robotic tail.
A robot
and
tail.
And you wore it and you used various sensors to determine your body movement and was supposed to mimic the way if you actually did have a tail, if you were biologically engineered to have one, how it would behave if you were wearing it.
Could it take stress off your lower back maybe?
Yeah, you know.
Maybe it's the answer to back pain.
I thought it was kind of bizarre, and I didn't spend any time with it.
It looked very interesting if you were trying to make a dinosaur movie or if you needed to play a dinosaur in a game. It's a costume that can be virtualized.
Table.
The interesting part about it is because it's a multi-jointed mechanical device that has sensors all over it to control its movement. Those sensors could feed back information to computer-generated tail that could be overlaid over you, being photographed from a camera's point of view. Mm-hmm. So your VR dinosaur derivative of yourself could look actually very much like an actual dinosaur person as computer-generated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you could play a dinosaur.
Yeah,
right.
I think in this same vein of artifacts that you could wear, it seemed like there was this glove that was being used for hand gesture animation that people were very excited about. Was that something new?
A stretch sensing soft glove of interactive hand posing.
That's right.
Capability.
Yeah. So that was also something that was in the Experiences Gallery, one of the experimental projects. Hmm. And they were showing a piece of fabric that had been cut with a specialized 3D printing or cutter.
Oh, active textile tailoring.
Right, active textile tailoring. And then the device was assembled with various kinds of circuitry in it that could detect movement or bending.
Yeah, I remember that.
Attached to an interface.
Yeah, is that the one where they created an outfit for a bunny? Literally?
No, that's a different one.
That was active textile tailoring. That was... I mean, it created an actual outfit the bunny could wear.
Things that we're describing, but that one was interesting too.
Right, that was something different. That was part of the rendering program with the bunny, showing how fur and hair and fabric could be mapped onto a 3D object properly.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, the glove that you describe, the main features of it were that it was lightweight, it was inexpensive, it was easy to make and customize.
And it didn't need optic tracking, right?
Right. It's attached to a computer through a wired interface, maybe 6 or 7 conductors. And that was enough information to get off of the glove into a machine learning program
Yeah. Easier, the simpler, the better. Less information to get the same data, to get the same action. That's good.
Yeah, the program had been trained to discriminate the intentional movements of the glove and filter them out from the noisy movements that the sensors were providing because they're inexpensive and they're not particularly high spec. But the machine learning program, as you move your glove around, was able to move the computer-generated glove that was following it and tracking it in real time very, very, very well and very accurately. I think that's the real payoff for AI and machine learning being used to take different kinds of data and to condition it so it can be utilized very easily without a lot of horsepower or compute or algorithmic applications.
That'll make it much more affordable for anybody that wants to create interesting productions.
You know, it reminds me a little bit, the way you're describing it, of the device that we gave to Al's mom for her birthday, which is a device that's called a TAP. We may have mentioned it on another show, but it's basically a collection of rings that you put on your hand. And then once those rings are on your hand, you learn to do an alphabet based on tapping your fingers in different gestures, like one off, two off, three off. And the interface is actually all recorded at the ring and how you're moving your finger. That's how it recognizes what your hand is tapping.
Yeah, a input device, text input device, particularly useful for low vision, no vision people.
I think another part, which leads me to mention that over the years, SIGGRAPH has been a place where the really most advanced motion capture technology that studios were using was often very elaborately set up on the show floor. And this year was no exception. They had just as much of it and even more of it and better than they ever have. So that aspect of gathering human data for acting and performance in films and the like is not only improving, it's just getting better and better and better. And so many other ways with the help of machine learning and cheaper processing and the like. The interesting new emergent aspect of that is using machine learning with a single monochromatic camera, like a cheap old webcam that's faced at the user, and it is able to detect and receive enough information from that camera that a machine learning program can animate your face extremely accurately or replace any face and drive it from just that simple webcam or to understand your body motion. So you could dance in front of the webcam, do something really quite elaborate, and it can set up all the bones in the 3D model computer generate a version of yourself that could be anything from an animal to,
So this really speaks well for small indie studios having these kind of capabilities.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's going to be in everybody's hands. really, everyone's going to have access to this stuff.
It's decentralized media toys on a massive scale.
It's cheap and it's coming fast.
Fast, cheap, and out of control.
Right, out of control. That's right.
All right,
we'll get to what's coming next with this after the break. Talking to Greg Panos from Cigar. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to the show, folks. We're talking to Greg Panos, giving us a report from the future, really, the future of media as seen at SIGGRAPH 2019 in LA this year, this month. Greg, welcome back to the show. Now, during the break, you sent us this link on remote rendering. Tell us about remote rendering. What is that?
Is that you posing as an astronaut?
Yeah. Are you are you remotely rendering onto the moon or what?
No. That was the space demo that NVIDIA did that Richard, that's Richard dancing.
That's Richard
that's
on
Richard.
The moon. Okay. That makes more sense.
I did run into Douglas Trumbull on the show floor, who I've known for a long time.
Yes, he goes way back to...
Yeah, he was a special effects guru for 2001. Yeah, that's right. And also Blade Runner. He was the guy that did all the effects for Blade Runner. Many, 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 many other favorite movies.
So did you have a chance to chat with him at all?
Yeah, I've known him for a long time. He was a keynote on a panel I did in 99 at NAB. He's a real Hollywood superstar. Like James Cameron level superstar.
Yeah, what's his next project?
We didn't have a chance to talk very much. He was quickly running through the show floor to see what he could find, and I was going to take him to show him something else, and then we just kind of got disconnected.
Yeah. So he's just trying to catch up to see what's up in the industry himself.
Yeah. It's funny at SIGGRAPH. You run into people who are friends of yours, and you have a nice long conversation with them, and other people, they wave at you, and you haven't seen them in 5 years. All you get is a wave.
Right. Like, you probably, that happened with our old buddy, Brett Leonard, who used to live in Santa Cruz here.
Yeah. Well, I got a hug from Brett.
All right. And he tell you what he was up to?
Yeah. So Brett's working with the folks that have the rights to the original MacGyver story. And they are fleshing that out in virtual reality using volumetric video.
Oh.
So I got a chance to speak to some of the people that are working with him on doing their volumetric video, and that was very exciting to me. Actually put on a virtual reality headset and then watch myself being created in real time live in front of me, sort of waving at myself and being able to walk around myself.
In a virtual environment.
Yeah, in real time. So this is the perfect thing. I mean, this is what every kid in the world is going to want to be doing in the future. They're going to want to be in front of these volumetric cameras and or array of cameras that are creating a volumetric database and then doing their performance or their little shtick and acting and funny stuff and stunts and then record it and edit it and then put it in a scene and then populate the scene with virtual props and other virtual actors and then send you the link and you'll put on your VR and you'll be in the scene with them and you'll be able to experience exactly what it was that they had imagined in three dimensions.
You can be anybody or be anywhere you want, kid. All you have to do is play in the dome.
Yeah, so, you know, Brett has been a thought leader and a pioneer and an early adopter of any technology that looks like it can help with better storytelling.
That's great. I'm glad his MacGyver would... It's kind of funny because MacGyver was always improvising. And I guess in the early days of this technology, like Palmer Luckey with the Oculus headset, improvisation is part of this movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you can do with chewing gum, though.
Chewing gum in virtual space? Fix your teeth?
So getting back to your question on remote rendering.
Yes.
So the interesting thing about what this is, if you imagine that you would build a high-end computer to do VR or do some kind of rendering or something that's very difficult to visualize, you would need to buy a graphics card that was a fairly expensive one, at least $800 to $1,000.
Yeah, NVIDIA, for example, like the 1080 card we have in our VR machine here.
Exactly. Yeah. So when that card came out, it was about $800 or $900, and it's still $400 or $500 if you can get one used. That's expensive. Yeah. A lot of people don't want to build a PC or a desktop machine anymore.
No, they want to buy a laptop for under $500.
They want to use their phone or a tablet or a laptop, and that's it.
Yeah,
and
not even laptops anymore. That's true. It's moving more and more.
There's some real high-end laptops that'll run VR, but they're expensive, and, you know, they have a 1080 card in it, but it...
Yes, and remote rendering then would allow a group rendering of projects?
No. What this is the graphics card doesn't have to be a really beefy graphics card. You can have just one that's in your tablet or your PC. It's not designed to do VR or anything heavy duty. The way the program works is it takes the information that needs to be rendered. It sends it up to the cloud in a very compact format, and then it's rendered on high-end systems in the cloud.
So the cloud does the heavy lifting.
Right. And then all what happens is that the frames that are being generated on the really high-end system on the cloud are being sent back to the device that you're using. So you're seeing 30 or 60 frames a second like you'd be watching video, but it's as if it's coming off of a high-end graphics card that you have attached to your machine, but it's all happening over the cloud. And the latency, the amount of time it takes to send the information up, have it rendered, and send it down has been optimized in such a way that it's low enough that the performance doesn't suffer when a human is using it.
Nice.
They don't feel frustrated by trying to make it work. The needs and requirement for people to have a lot of excessive hardware in their possession in order to participate in the very high fidelity, real time.
You could do anything, literally, right? So you could be on the moon, you could be on Jupiter, under the ocean. It'll just look more and more realistic.
Well, it's like everything else. You know, the developer environment needs to have a lot more horsepower and oomph than the viewer environment.
But it's both, though. It's like personal, your personal computers have a certain amount of capacity, and then their network, the network has a certain capacity.
Yeah. So the big tool makers that are making the high-end computer graphics tools that people do all their modeling and animating on, they've had to contend with equipping their users with high-end hardware and getting them to spend the money and put systems together to run their software. Now they have an option to utilize high bandwidth connection to serve their customers without them needing to have high-end hardware on their end, that they can do all that rendering in the cloud, and they can have their software basically send all the requirements and requests up to the cloud and have the rendering and
that could be really powerful. If the Apple glasses ever come out, they could be doing this and rendering high-quality stuff without having to carry all that processing power on board the glasses.
That's interesting, too, but in that it's giving the people who are interested in pursuing this talent a way in to a high-end facility, that they don't have to provide everything themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Google is launching an initiative called Stadia, and basically that's what it is. It's a large rack-mounted graphic servers at some location at a data center somewhere nearby in the world or on a high, low-latency bandwidth connection on the Internet. So you have all that power to utilize, but you have to use the high bandwidth of the Internet in order to get at it. So assuming that bandwidth is just going to continue to go up with the adoption of 5G, become even more local.
And what did you say? You have 400 or 500 megs down now in your house
for $50 a month? A fiber optic drop and an upgrade. Jeez. I'm running 500 meg down and 500 meg up.
Oh, my God.
And it's $50 a month. So that is basically saying that ideas like remote rendering really do have legs to stand on.
Yeah, sure. It's a whole new business model.
Oh, that the fiber optics is the future. Whatever is in between
is the
here
future.
And there.
I mean, the fiber optics is just happens to be the really good way to
do it. The problem
reliable.
Is... Yeah. People in the future will either be bandwidth haves or bandwidth have-nots. Mm-hmm. So you live way up at the top of a mountain. You've got to, get a better satellite dish and upgrade your service and to get anything near that kind of bandwidth. So
I get maybe 10 megs.
Working up in the mountains is probably not the best place to be doing it.
Not 500. Well, I can pay more and get more.
Right. Exactly. So every aspect of serving internet and bandwidth and latency, they're all incrementally improving. The pricing is becoming a little bit more competitive. And then all these applications and all these complicated, interesting, immersive technologies that can utilize that bandwidth have benefits as well from that growth.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating. It's like the old 4 bump in bandwidth when we went away from 56K modem. We started having real internet speeds of, 1 or 2 megabits per second. We started seeing Skype come in and that kind of thing back in 04.
Right. And this is where all the talk on augmented reality is they're talking about what's called the spatial cloud.
Yeah.
So just imagine that you're wearing augmented reality visor that's tracking and looking at all the data in the space in front of you using depth sensors and everything else, making just a huge volume of information that can't be processed locally. The spatial cloud supposes that that information will directly stream up to the cloud, be utilized, animated, tagged, cleaned up, and then sent back to you in a very efficient form to be overlaid on your visor. So none of that processing has to take place locally on your visor.
Yeah, that's great. And you could be anywhere. Now, what do what do you think of these programs by Bezos and Elon and OneWeb to blanket the planet with low Earth orbit bandwidth? You think
that's a great question for the last minute of the show, honey.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I just saying, it's sort of going in this direction where everybody ultimately could be doing this.
I'll tell you what I think in 1 minute.
No, 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 you got to go now.
We
got
to
ten.
Oh,
say goodbye.
Well, I think it's a great idea.
Okay, thank you.
Wonderful idea, guys.
I knew you'd like that.
Serve us more, faster, better.
Yeah, price of admission.
Cheaper.
For this 500 megabits per second. That's it.
Yeah.
You're in the club.
That's right.
Thank you, Greg Panos. Thank you, Richard Craig.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Onward.
Thanks, Richard, for the comments. Greg, till next time. Keep us posted, Dalton.
Bye-bye.
Future show on KSEO Santa Cruz. Until next week.